through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We got a fun Friday planned for you guys. We are joined today, Jake on vacation, by Michael Bumpus. One of our favorites. What's up, Bump?
What up, what up? How you
Happy
doing?
Happy Friday. Now, Bump, we do have a problem. I'll tell you what it is. Normally, every Friday on Jake and Stacy, we are joined by Michael Bumpus at noon for a noon interview. And it's always fun. It's always a great time. Lots of Seahawks insight. But the problem is that you're on with us now. So we had an opening at noon. I hope you're okay with it. We decided to go ahead and bring on someone else in your place.
Okay.
We're going to bring on new Seahawks defensive end, Carry Hyder. So I hope that's okay.
It's not an every week thing.
You're not being replaced forever, Bump.
Okay.
Just today.
As long as I get my job back, I'm good with Carry filling in for me.
Okay, fantastic. What if every Friday now? Sorry, Bump. We had Carry on again.
It was just
such a great time. So Carry Hyder, Jr. going to join us at noon. Can't wait to talk to him. Speaking of Carry Hyder, let's talk about this defensive line, because I watched Carry Hyder's press conference yesterday, watched Carlos Dunlap's press conference when he came back here, and I'm looking at these sack totals from the guys that are coming back, and Bump, I think fans should be excited, really excited.
Yeah, they should be, man. Carry Hyder, it's an upgrade. Now, you think of Jaren Reed, you're like, goodness, you're losing 6.5 sacks. I understand that, but now you got Carry, man, 8.5, and this is a dude who takes advantage of every opportunity that he's gotten. So it's the first time, I believe Curtis told us, first time he's signing a multi-year deal. Mm-hmm. So he's entering new territory. He feels wanted. He feels loved. He liked the pitch that Seattle sent towards his way. I'm excited about the dude. And you listen to him talk, he's excited as well. So the relationship is starting on the right foot.
I think, too, one thing that's really exciting about this is the idea that you're going to have, hopefully, some consistency. Now, Carry did mention one thing in his press conference that I think is true, and that you, as an NFL analyst, and us certainly last year just watching it, have found to be true, which is typically that defenses have kind of a slow start to the season. Now, the Seahawks defense started slow a little too long, picked it up, and it was exciting. What I'm hoping is that an actual offseason for these guys is going to make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, that's key, offseason. I couldn't imagine playing football and not having the traditional offseason that I've had and coached and played in throughout my whole life. And it just allows teams to come together. It allows coaches to evaluate as well. Because now coaches are, last season, they're looking at film from a year ago. Okay, mm-hmm. This is what we think he's going to do. Not sure what type of shape that he's in. You build that camaraderie. So I expect the defense to be better at the beginning of the season than they were last year. Then it's up to them just to build on that thing.
Now let's talk about where they've added and where they've lost, because there is an important position here that I need to ask you about. So we have the return of Carlos Dunlap, 5 sacks last year. Also, don't overlook the return of Benson Mayoa. There wasn't a lot of fanfare when he was initially signed because it was during Clowney Watch. When he was signed, people were like, I'm sorry, what? When you said signed a defensive end, I was assuming it was Clowney. Everyone's just looking around like, wait, why have I been following news on this guy for a while if you're going to bring in Benson Mayoa? Oh, turns out Benson Mayoa has a significantly more productive year than Clowney. Gets 6 sacks, and Clowney unfortunately finishes with 0. So you go, Benson Mayoa. You go, Glenn Coco. He comes back. You have Jamal Adams able to get surgery to repair both those shoulders. He gets a full offseason with his new team, which he didn't really have last year.
Yep.
Came here in July, had kind of a shortened offseason. 9.5 sacks last year. You have the debut of Daryl Taylor, I'm assuming. Another year for Alton Robinson. The addition of Carry Hyder, 8.5 sacks with San Francisco last season. And Puna Ford gets signed to a long-term contract. My biggest question, you already know what it is. What about the loss of Jaren Reed? How is that going to impact it? Do you think they made like net positive gains?
Yeah, I mean, you lose something in Jay Reed, right? Been there for a while. He's been a leader, had a good year in 2018. I think was his best year. But now you just ask guys like Puna Ford to step up. And I think Puna is capable of doing that. And if Jay Reed would have left and they would have got nothing in return, then I'd be a little worried. I was a little worried for a bit, but you signed Carry Hyder and sack numbers have gone up on paper. He still has to go out and ball. But you're leaning on Rasheem Green a bit more, who I think is good for 3 or 4 sacks a year. You got to see what Allen Robinson does. Can he back it up? And you mentioned Daryl Taylor. He's still a rookie in my book. The guy hasn't touched the field yet. So there's a bunch of potential there. You mix that with guys who have done it. You got Dunlap coming back. I'm optimistic about this defense. But I feel like every team's optimistic about their team during the offseason and preseason or whatnot. So they got to prove it still, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like they're certainly not only willing to prove it, but excited for a chance to prove it. So let's take a listen to some of what these guys have actually had to say. Carlos Dunlap in his own was this with press conference or with Danny and Gallon?
It was a presser.
Presser. Okay, in a presser, he talked about kind of his own expectations for this year based on last season.
I think the team's motivated. I think we all know that we fell short, and the main reason why was on us. We didn't perform when it was time to perform, so we got sent home. So coming in, you know, with that experience and having the experience to be with the team for the whole season, I think is going to help me long term, make things easier, and I feel like we can continue to build on what we left, because I feel like things were just starting to click for us going into the playoffs, and I want to pick up where we left off.
Now let's talk about that for a minute, because as great as it was to see Carlos Dunlap come back and as much of an impact as he made last year, and I still remember essentially ending 2 games with sacks, and it was really exciting, especially that Arizona Cardinals game, just the entire Seahawks sideline. I was looking down from the press box, erupted, and you didn't quite see the impact of it on the broadcast, but it was like every single person was freaking out, and it was so great. They needed that win. Brought so much energy, but the team still fell short, right?
Yeah.
That's on both sides of the ball. But watching it, where are you kind of hoping, like, man, I really want to see this. I really want to see this change. For me, it's just getting started sooner.
Yeah, that's what it is. Getting started sooner on both sides of the ball. In a perfect world, right, the offense is going, the defense is shutting guys out. And then don't forget special teams. I cannot remember the last time the Hawks – actually, I do remember them. I do remember. It was, I think, against Buffalo. The Hawks had a big return, I want to say, was their last really big play on special teams. So that's what you want. You want to see your guys healthy coming in, and you want to see the offense clicking. Now, you got a new offensive coordinator. You got a new guy on the defensive line. There are some pieces and guys that need to be acclimated, but there's no reason not to be optimistic about this thing. And I think with that Russell stuff being thrown to the side at this point, with Carey and with Carlos Dunlap being signed, all signs point to a decent start. Didn't have to be great. This would be decent. Lean on Russell Wilson, the guy you're paying $35 million to get this thing going. But just a decent start is needed, especially on defense.
Can I also say something about the Russell Wilson stuff, too? Because I agree with you. It seems this year that a Russell Wilson trade, and I know Adam Schefter has still said that it's on the table, it feels very much off the table.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what one of the teams he was interested in would be able to offer. Chicago had the most, made its best offer. Seattle wasn't interested. I don't see another team topping that, so I'd still be shocked. That said, you're right. It did dominate Russell Wilson a lot of the offseason conversation, rightfully so. Franchise quarterback talks about being a little unhappy. You're going to now look at, oh my gosh, is this like a momentous change in the franchise? The entire time we were talking about, what do the Seahawks need to do on offense, on the O-line, to make Wilson happy, and should they? Meanwhile, the Seahawks end up investing in the defensive line, trying to improve that, trying to turn that around. Might that end up being the better move?
No, I think offensive line is the better move.
Still,
Because I'm a firm believer that if Russell lets go of the ball on time, if he is healthy, if he's available, if guys around him are ready to go, the offense can kind of carry this team for a bit. So your first priority is, one, to protect your biggest investment and make him happy. I don't care what nobody says. Oh, Russell shouldn't have said this. He shouldn't have came out and talked. He's the quarterback. He's the franchise guy. You might not like it, but you got to understand it. Guy was sacked 394 times. He's tired of being hit. And what did they do? They try to appease him by bringing in Gabe Jackson. I think that move was going to be made anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just amplified because now it seems like people can perceive it as the organization just giving in to Russell's demands when it's really your left guard retired. You have to replace him. Let's go get somebody.
Yeah, that was why the timing of it was so weird, too, is like you were going to have to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So the fact that they replaced him isn't necessarily caving to Russell Wilson. But also, like, what's wrong with doing that? I digress. a conversation for later. We also heard from Kerry Hyder the other day. Now, as a reminder, he will join us at 12, in my mind, filling in for Michael Bumpus. What a trooper. He said that he models his game after one former Seahawk. This should make fans excited in cut number two.
It did. You know, that's a guy I've looked up to in the league, and a guy I've kind of modeled my game after. So, you know, the characteristics were there because I kind of that's who I watch, you know, same body type, that kind of thing. So I just kind of always that's kind of one of the reasons why I was kind of pitching myself in Seattle. I can kind of see myself in that same type of role as Mike.
That Seahawk, Michael Bennett.
Yeah.
Who I think all three of us, you, me and Curtis, I mean, maybe you guys would disagree. I think Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill were the last two great free agent additions this team made. They've made good free agent additions, made great midseason trades too. I think those have been some of their best trade moves. That was the last time I think that they like completed the team.
Yeah, and for him to look up to Mike Bennett, man, that's awesome. I mean, they're about the same size. Mike is like, what, 6'4", 270? Mm-hmm. Hyder's 6'2", 270.
Yep.
They move Mike inside on passing downs. I think you can do the same with Kerry if you wanted to. Quick off the line, just let's not get all the flags that Mike used to get, though. You can model your game after Mike Bennett, but those jumping early, you know, let's not do that.
Can he play like he did without getting a couple flags? Because part of the thing was he is there in a split second.
Facts.
So it's like you kind of got to – there's like a certain number you don't want to get over mm-hmm. where you're like doing a net negative for your team. But it's also like it comes with the territory kind of thing. He was pushing it, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Sometimes I was like, you know what? If he's going to be the first one off that line and get to the quarterback before anyone can stop him,
yeah,
I'll take that.
You kind of got to take it. It's kind of like when Russell holds on to the ball and
exactly.
spins and gets outside the pocket. It's like, that's what makes him special. And you
right.
got to rein it in sometimes. But, yeah, you got to take it.
Now, is that too high a bar to set for yourself?
Nah, there's never too high of a bar.
So you genuinely have – because you've watched some Kerry Hyder tape.
Yeah.
You're talking to us about it this morning. Have you seen enough – and we're going to get to this in four-down territory. Have you seen enough where you think, I could see that?
8.5 sacks is his best season. Mike's best season was 10 sacks, and he also had a season with 8.5 sacks. So I think he can duplicate numbers-wise as far as the style of play and looking exactly like Michael Bennett. I think that's going to be tough. Kerry has to be Kerry. Numbers-wise, I think he has the ability and the potential to match some of those numbers. It's all about really what I want out of Kerry. I just want him to cause havoc and have everybody eat. If this team has 47 to 50 sacks this year, that's going to be a win, regardless of what Kerry's numbers are. But people are going to focus on the numbers. They're going to expect him to have at least 8 sacks, I guess, which is fair. But you always want to shoot high. Man, I thought when I played Stace, I thought I was the best receiver in all the land, and I wanted to run routes like Wes Welker. I wanted to be just as fast as Randy Moss. You have to push yourself that way. You have to motivate yourself. So I'm okay with it. If he falls short, that doesn't mean he's not contributing to this team.
I think what I'm really hoping that we see this year, and I know that one way to build a team is like you have a guy you don't want to take off the field. Right?
Yep.
Like, you have a Frank Clark. You have a guy where you think, yeah, we don't have a ton of depth behind him, but that's okay because he's one of the best players on the team. Now, they have a guy like that with Jamal Adams, who you never want to see off the field, but take him out of the equation, looking just at the defensive line. I think what I'm kind of hoping to see this year, even more than the one guy you can't take off the field, is this rotation of guys that are constantly getting to the quarterback. I want the other team, I want the offensive line to feel overwhelmed. And I want constantly to have to look at my little cue card and look at the field and figure out, okay, now who was that just got a sack? Was that Kerry Hyder? Was that Carlos Dunlap? Was that Benson Mayoa? You know, is that 94 in there? Is that, you know, whoever, Rasheem Green? I don't know if he wears 94 anymore. I think he switched. But you know, like who's getting in there? I think that that's when they were at their best.
Yeah, that's the great thing about D-line is that rotation. That offensive line, for the most part, is going to stay in the game 99% of the time unless a guy goes down. So now when you got two or three guys that this guard or tackle have to deal with, that's two or three different styles, and they're fresh. So they're coming off the sideline. They've had a couple plays to catch their breath, and they're gone. And you're right. It's by committee. A team doesn't get 50 sacks because one guy has half of them. No, you get 50 sacks because there's three here, there's four there, there's six there, there's eight there. And I think that's what we all want from this defensive line.
All right. It is 11:15. That means it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question one, rough last 24 hours for the Mariners, but No news worse than what we got yesterday on James Paxton, that he's likely headed for Tommy John surgery. So which Seattle athlete's career potential was most impacted by injuries?
See, I kind of cheated on this one. He's a Seattle athlete, but he didn't play for the Mariners or the Hawks. It's Brandon Roy, man.
I was thinking that, too.
Yeah, it's Brandon.
I'll allow it.
This guy, three-time All-Star. I mean, his one rookie of the year, his second year, he's tearing it up. And you watch this dude play, and he was destined for greatness. The short time he was in the league, man, he was hot. So I kind of cheated. He's a Seattle guy, but he played it for Portland. But Brandon Roy, man, I was disappointed to see the way he went out. Six knee surgeries. Mm-hmm. Six of those things, man. Crazy.
Man, let's see. Impacted by injury. More recent guys, it wasn't going to be a great career, but a player I always remember talking about all the time was CJ ProSize. Yep. I'm trying to think of more legendary guys, but the guys I can think of, you know, like some of the greats, really only ran into trouble in the later years when they couldn't stay healthy. It wasn't something that consistently nagged at them all the time. Is there someone you can think of where, like, every year it was just derailed?
Yeah, every year, not so much, but just who knows what he would have been able to do over the last, like, 3 or 4 years as Cam Chancellor.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because his career got cut short pretty early. Who knows how many great years. He could have been I still think he's Hall of Fame caliber.
Yeah.
Had he put together 2, 3, 4, all-pro level seasons, no doubt he's going to camp.
That's actually a good one because I agree with you. It wasn't that he or Cliff Averill's careers were injury-riddled. It's that both were ended the same season, essentially, by a similar injury, which was that stinger, and then they found out they had some neck issues, and they, decided to retire for health-related reasons. But, like, if you don't have that one injury, how far could either of those guys, particularly Cam, have gone?
Yeah, it wasn't like we're talking about these guys and saying, oh, man, it's all downhill from here. You know, there's no more potential left in these guys. Cam was still balling. Cliff was still doing his thing. So I think that's what stings the most, that you could see them playing a few more years at a high level.
Number two.
I turned 30 today, you guys.
Happy birthday, Curtis.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Welcome to the 30 Club.
It's good to be here. It doesn't feel as bad as I think everybody kind of thinks.
It's like
would.
Jumping into the pool. It's always worse than you think it's going to be, and you get in, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I feel like an adult.
Yeah.
Just one of those kids in their 20s anymore.
Exactly.
What is one thing you guys have learned in your 30s, I'm just assuming that, that you wish you had known in your 20s?
Oh.
That it's okay to leave a bar early. that it's okay to be like, guys, it is 9 o'clock and I'm going home
watching
now
my
to
shows.
Order a pizza and watch TV. Like that it's that you don't have to make anyone else happy by giving them a lot of your time. Unless it's like a friend's birthday, you guys are out. You know, it's fine to have a night on the town, but I didn't learn that until I was in my late 20s and became really comfortable with it at like 29, 30. Obviously this last year is different, but I'm kind of a homebody, and I always used to, I don't know about you guys, you'd be out and you'd be like, oh, it's like midnight, I'm tired, I'm not having fun anymore, but I feel like I have to stay out.
Yeah.
No, you don't. You don't. Make yourself happy.
I was trying to kick it. I'm hanging out as long as I could. Something I learned, I would just to stretch more and drink water.
Oh, man.
Because, my body hurts at times now. And back then, I didn't drink a lot of water. Now, like, I'm going to the restroom every 5-10 minutes. My wife thinks something's wrong with me. But, yeah, take care of your body because you're going to be 30-something one day, and that back is going to hurt for no reason.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, it's already hurting for no reason.
Oh, that is a really good one, though, is when you're in your 20s, it can be anything. Like, I don't know how many people are going to resonate with this, but, like, skincare. I've met so many people that are like, I don't really wear sunscreen. I don't wash my face. I don't do anything because, they don't notice it when you're in your
20s. Like a catcher's glove by the time you're 45.
Drink water. Please take care of your body. Bump is exactly right because even if you don't see it when you're 22, you will see it when you're 32. Take care of yourself.
Number three.
Aaron Rodgers currently guest hosting Jeopardy for the next week. Which current athlete would be the best game show host?
So current.
He hasn't been great. I'll say that. Like, as a Jeopardy snob,
yeah,
he has not really brought it. And maybe that's my
Seahawk-dom
coming out here.
I felt like he'd be so great with it. He's so snarky and self-righteous.
Which you'd think would be great for the host of Jeopardy.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you want your Jeopardy host to be.
Current. See, I'm only thinking of former Seahawks
now. I was thinking former, too.
I know. Okay, current. Ooh, maybe. I mean, Tom Brady's older. I don't know that he's got quite the same demeanor, but he's pretty... Tom Brady seems like a guy. Has he hosted SNL?
Yes.
He seems like a guy that would do well with that. Like, he's pretty endearing on Twitter, pretty good in commercials. So I don't know how he'd do on Jeopardy se, but I feel like he could nail it.
Brooklyn Nets forward Blake Griffin.
Yes.
He'd be a great
That's a
James
great
show host.
Yeah, one.
That'd be a good one. Oh, man. Current player. I'm going to lean on... Goodness, I'd go Drew Brees. Drew Brees because I feel like he's going to run the show. If this, if we got a break at 11:22 and 25 seconds, we're going to break at 11:22 and 25 seconds. He's witty enough to make conversation with guys, but I think he's kind of like he's kind of like a game manager now. He'd be like a show manager then. Just keep the show on point. Keep
now,
going.
What if you had to pick a current Seahawk or Mariner? Keeping it local.
Oh, man.
I think Dwayne Brown could be one guy, really mature. He seems like he'd handle himself well on camera.
An authority figure.
An authority figure, commands respect, wouldn't get too big for the moment.
KJ. KJ's got a great personality, man.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I'd choose KJ. KJ would be good for, I think, like a family game show host.
Mm-hmm.
Like a
Family Feud?
Family Feud.
Yeah.
I think KJ would nail that. That seems right up his alley. Just lots of excitement. Curtis, you're getting a lot of happy birthday messages from the text line. 710-710. You guys can join this conversation anytime. Now, I have a couple suggestions for Jeopardy hosts.
Okay.
Someone, no surprise here, Go Cougs, says Gardner Minshew.
Yeah.
Pretty good Jeopardy host
there. That.
Christian from the 206 says Jamal Adams and Bobby. Brian from Linwood also says Bobby Wagner. And don't forget, from the 360, Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Oh, Ryan Fitzpatrick. He went to Harvard. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know this, but Ryan Fitzpatrick did go to Harvard. A lot of great former players in here, but these are the kinds of names I was thinking of, like Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch. Like, those would be great hosts for different reasons.
I think Doug Baldwin would be good, too.
Yeah.
I like Doug. He would have to be on the most serious game show ever, though. It'd have to be like a Jeopardy-type move for Doug Baldwin. Doesn't seem like
he wouldn't do like a wipeout.
No, nothing with
slapstick humor.
No.
Or would it be funnier to have Doug Baldwin completely straight faced during a game, like a wipeout or like a Nickelodeon kids game, like Legends of the Hidden Temple, and he looks like he's just very serious.
of the Hidden Temple.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Classic.
Speaking of 90s children. Again.
Yeah, we're really showing our age.
We're really doing it. All right. Now, we are going to have Carrie Hyder on later in the show. We're also going to talk about some concerns with the Mariners pitching situation. Going to update you on James Paxton, the latest with that. Before we get to any of that, though, we're going to be joined here by Dave Wyman, talk a bit more about what the Seahawks defense can do in 2021. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Dave Wyman joining us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hey, Dave, happy Friday.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good. I called you Dave and I realized it felt weird because I always say Wyman, so... I'm going to switch back.
Yeah, what the heck?
I know, sorry.
You're a little bit familiar, I guess, huh?
Hey, Bump and I are talking to Carrie Hyder in about a half hour here, and both of us are really excited to talk to him because we're both really excited for what the defensive line can look like. I want to know your excitement level. Do you think that this is the best they could look in years, or are you thinking there's still some unanswered questions?
Well, I think there's always unanswered questions. I mean, look, yeah, it's funny. We've been talking a lot about LJ Collier, you know, and he's a first rounder. And I think if he wasn't a first rounder, you know, nobody would be saying anything, but he was. So, and I just think he's like a year behind, you know, I mean, his development, you know, his rookie year, he struggled because of, he had injuries and things like that, but he made some plays last year. I just think it gets thrown at him, you know, well, you're a first rounder, but But also, you know, I think he could move inside. They have so many defensive ends, guys. I mean, I'm just going through and I pretty much knew everybody, but I was like, when you see him listed, it's like LJ Collier, Carlos Dunlap, Rasheen Green, Kerry Hyder now, Benson Mayoa, Demontre Moore, I think is he, yeah, he's still on the roster, Alton Robinson, and then Daryl Taylor. So, yeah, you've got a lot of options at that defensive end, you know, whether it's the Leo or the five technique. But, you know, you've only got three guys on the inside. And I do think it was, you know, you can't say that we wouldn't be better off with, you know, Jaron Reed. But that just didn't work out. And that was a really weird thing for him to do, to you know, it eventually led to him getting cut by the Seahawks.
Wyman, what about KJ? Now he's out there, he's floating around. The longer he's available, does that favor the Hawks, or does that swing the other way?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth so much on this bump. I mean, originally I'm like, look, that's the guy I want back. You know, but you have to look at it from a numbers standpoint. Where are they really pretty stacked at linebacker? I mean, other than, you know, safety, I feel like they're really solid. And then linebacker. So, and then, you know, is KJ going to be on the field that much? If, you know, if you go to the nickel package, he's probably coming off the field and you're going to have Brooks and Bobby out there. So, I don't think I've answered your question yet, Bump. Let's see. I really, really want KJ back. I thought he was by far the best linebacker last year.
Yeah.
But he is getting older. Do they really need him? I mean, here's what I would think. That if KJ out in the market, if he would have, you know, he would have made a big splash if he'd have got signed in the first 2 weeks, you know, or a week and a half or whatever. So now I don't think there's a lot of money out there. And I think that that bodes well for him re-signing here, because I don't think, let's say it goes down to, I'm just throwing a number out there, but let's say, you know, he can get $4 million in Dallas and the Seahawks want to pay him $3 million. Would you, if you were him, would you take your family down there and go to another team at the end of your career? Probably not. So, you know, I think that they can probably get him back at a pretty reasonable price.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to see that. I think you're right. You're kind of split where emotionally, as a fan and as someone who's been watching KJ's career and knows how effective he can be, particularly how effective he's been lately, you're thinking, like, I want him back. You also can't fault a team that's cash strapped for making the decision. It's a really tough call. I agree with you on that one.
Well, and it's kind of, yeah, and it kind of limits him too, because he's really like a 4-3 outside linebacker. I mean, he can play inside, obviously. He can play, well, he's played middle linebacker. His first game as a rookie, his first start was at middle linebacker in San Francisco. So he can play everywhere, but ideally he's a good 4-3 strong side outside linebacker. But yeah, that part of it kind of limits where he can go, you know. But I would say this, and I said it about Robert Saleh, who's familiar with KJ, having coached in the NFC West. There's a couple of Seahawk coaches down in Jacksonville. There's of course Dan Quinn in Dallas. If you want to build your team around a guy and build up your defense, and like, this guy's the standard of what we want as a, not just as a player, but as a human being and as a leader. Yeah, you throw some money at KJ Wright. That's the guy that you can build a franchise around, or at least a defense around. So that's the threat, I think, of him going somewhere else.
Wyman, Dunbar is going to the Lions. We didn't see much of him, but what I saw, I was encouraged by. Were you disappointed that they weren't able to get this done? And do you think they have enough on the roster right now to where they won't really feel the effects of losing this guy?
Yeah, you know, Bump, we always talk about it. You know, Bob Stelton will say, you know, I just didn't see it. I'm like, yeah, I don't think anybody saw it. You know, I think Pete saw it. I did a football 101 thing on him because he was so good against the run. In Atlanta, you know, he had a couple of plays that were just, he's got an uncanny knack of knowing where to be on the field. And then, you know, mostly more than anything, Pete Carroll was saying that he is like an unusually special player. And Pete's pretty good at evaluating, you know, he's an old DB coach. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those words coming from him meant more than anything I saw. But the fact that he signed a minimum deal in Detroit makes me think, well, they must have just decided to move on from him. He does have an injury history and everything, but I would have loved to have seen him develop here and, you know, see what he can do because, I mean, Pete was comparing him to Richard Sherman in some ways. So, yeah, it's so disappointing, and it was such a whipsaw up and down thing with him. At first you're excited, then he gets in trouble, mm-hmm. and then you think he's going to, you know, have all these legal problems, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's scot-free. And then he shows up here, and I think he had like a death in the family where he had to miss some practices and stuff, so it just never got it going. But the fact that he signed for a minimum deal in Detroit means that the Seahawks must have just been, well, we can't take the risk on this guy because of the injuries.
How do you feel about Cody Barton potentially replacing KJ there at Sandbacker?
Well, I always get all these texts from people that Dave wants to go to prom with Cody Barton and Dave has a crush on him. And I love Cody Barton. I mean, he's a really good player. I'll bet you that the Seahawks have fielded lots of calls from other teams about trading because he's sitting on the bench. He can pretty much do everything. He's incredibly physical. If you go back and look at that Minnesota game, watch him come downhill on linebackers and how physical he is. And he was a huge part of that fourth down stop where he just killed their big fullback, C.J. Ham. So, yeah, and then, you know, you look at his pass coverage. He's very knowledgeable. I mean, he's just he's a pro, and he's sitting on the bench. But, I mean, if he's going to come out and play Sam linebacker, I think you're still really set. If you don't have KJ and you have him, Brooks, and Bobby on the field, I don't think there's going to be that much of a drop-off. I think once you let this guy get out there on the field, he can run. Great knowledge as far as the linebacker goes. Everything about his game I really like. But it's more of like a promise, right? Because we just haven't seen that much of him, and he just doesn't get on the field.
He is Dave Wyman, co-host of Wyman and Bob. You can listen to them later today starting at 2 p.m. Thanks so much, Wyman.
Bump, Stacey. It was a pleasure. Thanks. Talk to you guys soon.
See ya. All right. What has you guys more concerned right now with the Mariners? I'm going to ask both you, Curtis, and you, Bump, to choose. I'll have my answer, but also listeners, text in 710-710. What has you more concerned right now with the Mariners? Is it the rotation or the lineup? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. No Jake today, he's on vacation. So instead, we have a fun surprise for you guys. Michael Bump is in studio with us today. Bump, I have, you know, I want it to be a fun segment, a fun day. We don't often get you, obviously, for a full show, but certainly in studio. Unfortunately, the segment's going to hurt.
Yeah.
So now the question I had for you guys was, when it comes to the Mariners, what has you more concerned right now, the rotation or the lineup? This is prompted, of course, by an offense where bats have gotten a little bit quiet and the rotation where Marco Gonzalez has had his second tough outing. Now, you're counting on Marco to be your model of consistency for the year through two starts, though. Are you ready, Bump?
I'm ready.
10 1/3 innings pitched, 17 hits, 12 earned runs, 5 home runs, walked 5. He's got 8 strikeouts, but that is not the Marco Gonzalez we're used to seeing.
I don't like that.
News gets worse. James Paxton reportedly could be seeking a second opinion and has been told he should undergo Tommy John surgery. It's bad news, Bears. I'm going starting rotation. I'm going pitching on this one. How do you not?
You got to go pitching. You got your ace who isn't playing like an ace right now. Now, he can find his way out of it, right? He can work through it and get better. But initially, you want to see this guy come out and set the tone. Paxton goes down. He's probably going to have Tommy John surgery. So now what? So now you rely on Kikuchi, who had control issues last year. You got Sheffield and Dunn, who are young, who just haven't been there and done that a lot. So you don't want to depend on the young guys. The two guys that you wanted to depend on are hurt and not really performing. You have to be a bit nervous. Now, the bats are going to get going, I feel like. You got some guys who are going to get healthy. You're going to help this lineup up. But it's all about that pitching. Just look at my Dodgers. You got pitching, you win championships. So, you know, Mariners need a better rotation as of right now. Excuse me.
Well, and the good thing is I think people are a little more optimistic about the lineup, given that you're going to see Jared Kelnick this year. and he looked great in spring. Mm-hmm. Given that the guys that are supposed to be good for you, Mitch Haniger, Ty France, have been pretty solid for you, particularly France, and also given the fact that Kyle Lewis is going to be back soon. I mean, Scott Service, Curtis, told us that he could be back any day. Like, yeah, he was a little ahead of schedule.
Yeah, Service on Tuesday told us he was anticipating Lewis being back sort of the mid to late part of this month. So we're nearing the mid part of this month. So maybe a week or two left before we see Kyle Lewis again.
Now that brings me to my next question, which is, given what we've seen in a very, very tiny fraction of a season, are your expectations for the season still the same?
Yeah, still the same. I don't expect much. And that's just how I am, though. My wife gets on me about it because I, like, always prepare for the worst. You know, I'm like, look, it could happen, but I'm just not going to get my hopes up. And I just listen to the organization, and we all know how things work, right? They're just going to say some things to cover their rears. But they don't have high expectations for this year. So I don't have high expectations for this year. Marco got me going, though, before that, after the first game goes, look, we're going to come out, man. They're sleeping on us. We're going to get guys going. And I started to get pumped up. Then I'm like, hold on, simmer down. Young team. Okay. Lower expectations.
Check yourself.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. No, this actually makes me nervous. So, Bump, when do you tell yourself in a game, any sport, like, we've won this? Do you wait until, like, all right, they got like a 25-point lead?
Yeah, I wait until like a minute. Like, it depends on the sport.
It's like statistically impossible for them not to win it. You have to wait that long.
I've seen it all. I've seen comebacks in basketball, baseball, football, soccer. I mean, sports hasn't been great to me when it comes to team-wise. Individual accolades, I got all of them, right? Most of them, at least. But I've been a part of some bad teams, some teams that have blown leads. So I'm humble when it comes to expectations.
What's the worst blown lead you've ever been part of?
Worst blown lead. I wouldn't even say it was a blown lead. I was with Washington State. We started off 6-3. We're ranked like 23 in the country. We haven't been to a bowl game yet. We beat UCLA. You would think we just won the Pac-12 championship because we're like, we're going to a bowl game. We lose the rest of our games and miss a bowl game. Yeah.
What's the worst loss you've ever seen from a team that you watch?
Worst loss of everything.
Excluding Super Bowl 49.
I was a part of it. My last game at Wazoo, Oregon State came in and beat us like 55-10.
Oh.
It was senior night. My mom was there. It was raining sideways. Like I say, Stace, sports has not been kind to me when it comes to team.
All right. Well, let's look for some hope and try to dig in for some hope then. I don't think that our expectations for the Mariners this year are necessarily that they're going to be in the playoffs. The hope is just that you get better, right? Now, eventually you're going to need to put your foot on the gas. It's only going to work for fans for so long for Jerry DePoto and Scott Service to come in here and say, hope is we get better in the second half. After a while, people are going to be like, how about we start that second half, right? Like, I'm only going to hear this for so long. Curtis, when you look at this team and you look at some of the pieces, where's your reason for optimism? I mean, how should fans feel about this? Help us, help Bump not feel so hopeless here. Bump needs some hope.
Well, I think the biggest reason for optimism in the season's first week is Ty France. He has been incredible with the bat. He's been everything that he was billed as in spring training, and he's brought it into the regular season. And he's just been so good with the bat in his hands. Now, with the glove, that's not his calling card. He's not somebody that's going to win a gold glove at any point. But the great thing is, there's a DH spot for him. Like, if he's going to be a long-term building block for this Mariners team, which I think he will be, that DH spot could very well be his in the future. And that's, you know, that's a good bat to have in your lineup every single day. And Mitch Haniger, he's been great too. You know, a year and a half away from the game, coming back and really kind of picking up where he left off pre-injuries. Those are two of the biggest bright spots right now. And we kind of talked about it a little bit off the air, Stacey. Just the package that the Mariners got back in that trade with the Padres last year, we all knew it had the potential to be a good one, but you get Ty France back. Taylor Trammell breaks camp with the team this year. He looks to be ahead of where a lot of people had kind of pictured him to be at this point. You've got Luis Torrens, who's giving you some good ABs off the bench as your backup catcher. We still don't know what Andres Munoz can do in the bullpen because he's still on his way back from Tommy John surgery, but that trade could look to be one that really propels this team over the next couple of years.
Curtis, you need to be a part of the PR team for the Mariners. You gave me some glimmer. Let's go. Hey, if I get too jacked up, I'm blaming it on Curtis Rogers. Right, he just made me a
totally
believer.
That's totally fair. That's completely fair. Someone rightfully, by the way, let's see, I just had it. I think it was Christian, but someone pointed out that one of the best comebacks in sports, obviously it's the Cavs. Down
yes.
1-3 and you come back and win the, mm-hmm. the finals. That's a really good one. To the point where like the you blew a 3-1 lead became
a meme.
Became a
still
meme.
Still is.
Yeah. Like so and so was up 3-1. It's people still do that. Obviously you got the New England Patriots coming back and the Falcons constantly getting 28-3? Constantly getting 28-3 mm-hmm. on everything. That's you don't want to be on the other side of that.
Definitely not.
No.
Definitely not.
Absolutely not. Bump is just smiling like, yeah, you don't.
Nah, I've been there. Kind of something. Not down 1-3 or 3-1, but yes, I've been on the end of some bad stuff.
All right. You guys, we have a really exciting guest coming up. New Seahawks defensive lineman, Kerry Hyder Jr., going to join us. We're going to not just learn a bit more about him, but we've got plenty of questions about his role on the team. I got to know what the pitch was that Seattle made to him. I want to know why he feels that this was the spot, this was the place to go. And I want to know how excited he is about this defensive line. Bump and I have been talking about it all morning. Let's see how Kerry Hyder feels. That's next.